welcome to another episode of Living Downstream. In today's episode, we'll hear from Phil Moulton of Douglas County Bees and a local beekeeper, Stan Petrowski, who you might recognize from another show. My name is Ryan, and I am the host of Living Downstream. I'm an AmeriCorps member serving in the role of Environmental Education and Outreach Leader for the organization Umpqua Watersheds. Before we begin, I'd like to do a land acknowledgement. I think it's important to remember that the land upon which Umpqua Watershed is located was formerly occupied by various indigenous groups, including Cow Creek Umpqua, Coquille, and Malala, among others. Today we have Phil Moulton of Douglas County Bees. So I understand you started Douglas County Bees. Can you tell us a little more about that group?
I got into bees in about 2011. My parents used to be into bees many, many years ago. And when I moved down here to Camas Valley, the question I had in my mind is, you know, if the crap hits the rotary impeller and everything goes, what have I got to trade? Money. So I started raising bees. Now, the first three packages of bees that I received, I ordered them, they died. I ordered two more, they died. At that point, I went, that's enough. So I got involved with the Oregon State Beekeepers Association. And at this time, I'm a journeyman master beekeeper and a mentor. As far as Douglas County Bees, I started it in about 2014. It was incorporated as a nonprofit in 2015. And right now, depending on how you look at it, membership has really fluctuated the last year, obviously. We have had up to 100 members. We used to meet monthly at the Douglas County Courthouse on the third floor. We don't at this time because we can't get in. We may start having summer meetings in parks again, maybe. We may go to a Zoom format for a while. Don't know. So right now, it's a little hard to get coordinated with people and help people out, because the nice thing about the meeting is anyone can come in. You don't have to be a member. And if you want to be a member, it's $12 a year. So it's not a big deal. And you're free to ask questions. We have people in the club that have been in beekeeping for 30, 40 years. We have people in the club that might get bees next year. So there's a huge variable of knowledge there. The biggest thing about Douglas County Bees is the intent is to save the bees and to teach people about bees. And the biggest thing that we do is we have what's called a swarm list and a cutout list. If you're a member, you can get on the cutout list. And if, for example, you call up or get on the internet and say, hey, I got bees on my porch, we will come out for free and remove them. Some of the removals have been quite involved, containing man lifts and a lot of people, and some were very simple. But that's our main focus, is to help bees. When I start a class or a meeting with bees, I start with the following statement. It's tough to be a bee in Douglas County. Douglas County is not a good bee place. We have too much herbicides, pesticides. We don't have large agriculture. We have some blueberries, and the bees do like blueberries. They want nothing to do with the marijuana grows. So that's a non-issue. And because we're mostly lumber and woodland, it's just not a good place to have bees. So every beehive that we can save is important. The honeybees and the wax for honeybees, you know, the wax that the bees produce, all of the wax in the United States is poisoned, every bit of it. Who poisoned it? We, the beekeepers. Okay, there are things like varroa mites, and that for a while we were just paranoid about varroa mites. So big industry got together and said, hey, use this chemical, and the bees are going to die. You need to use this chemical. No, you don't. So a lot of people that are in Douglas County bees that have bees have garden and such that are completely natural. They don't use toxic pesticides or anything. Those people that use things like Roundup poisons the ground for like 5 years. One of the big problems that we have in the county is that there are certain groups, and I will not mention their names, that own a lot of property in the county. And they go out and they go out in July, August, spray the blackberries. And then in September, they come back with a backhoe and they just scrape it all off. The problem is they are poisoning these blackberries at the worst time of the year. That's when they're blooming. A bee host is somebody who has bees on their property, but don't want to deal with them. I put 3 hives up on a hill above Dillard. Now this gentleman, he's passed on now, was so green and so, you know, earth friendly. He even had the cell towers taken off his property. And he owned about 1,000+ acres. And you could overlook Roseburg. It was a nice place. So I put some beehives up on it. Unfortunately, this large corporation, I will not mention, came in and poisoned all the blackberries around it. When I went up there to check the bees and opened them up, one, they were all dead. Number two, the smell with the toxic junk was just disgusting. So when I come into meetings, I said, hey, it's a rough place for bees because you've got corporate entities that don't want to save them. They're not thinking about saving them. We've got lumber companies that come out. Now, some lumber companies will call us if they find a hive, and we'll come out and rescue the hive. I also accept we cannot save every bee. We try, but not every hive can be saved, but we'll do our best. So yeah, most people do the natural beekeeping. There are some good books on that. As far as people getting involved with beekeeping or are interested in it, my first comment, don't watch YouTube. You've got too many people on YouTube that say, hi, I'm a beekeeper and I'm going to go check my hive. And he's out there with shorts and a t-shirt and no protective equipment. I'm sorry, this guy's a fool. And even though he might be able to do because he's calm, that's a bad example. So the best thing is to get involved in the local bee group and ask questions. And when you're ready to get bees, we have resources to get bees inexpensively, and the equipment for the beehive itself. And we have suggestions about what places you don't want to shop for bees. Again, I will not mention them, but most of these companies that sell bees commercially, they sell them from Southeast Washington State or down in California. I've got a couple of people in town here that they go and do the bee circuit. In the early spring, they go out and they head up to Hood River and they pollinate the trees. Then they head over east into Idaho, do more pollinating. Then they come down and around California where they hit the almond orchard. One hive in an almond orchard for 2 weeks can net you $300. So it's big money. A couple of people will come back up here after the almond orchards, split their hive in half, and sell the splits. Okay, I have issues with that, but that's not a problem, and I don't want to speak names.
What bee species can be found in Oregon?
There are over 500 types of bees in Oregon. The only ones that we're really concerned with, the major bees that people use for honey, are Italians, Carnolians, Buckfast, which is pretty much gone now, Russians, Germans, and Caucasian. Each breed has their own attributes. As far as I'm concerned, you might want to go ahead and order some Italian bees, but next year you have Douglas County bees because they're breeding with the other bees around. So you can't keep a solid strain anywhere. But those are the 6 main types that produce honey that we harvest. Again, there's over 500 other ones that live in the ground, live in trees. They'll do some pollination. Some will collect lots of honey. Some will not collect honey at all. So, but as far as the main bees, there's, like I say, 6. And each have their advantages. Italians, for example, are very gentle. They're not aggressive. They've got good working areas. Russians are just go-getters. You know, they work hard and they're very protective of their hive, which can be a good and a bad thing.
In terms of those different types of bees that are making the honey, like you mentioned, like Italian and Russian and German and different things, are they like, because I know that sometimes when species are brought to a place, they're just considered like introduced and sometimes they're invasive. So like they're not considered invasive in this area?
Okay. Not at all. The problem is if you go to a store and you want to get a beehive and you order a beehive from them, and you dump $200-$300 down, you know, all the suits and the bag, the whole works. I'm going to raise bees. You put it all together. I watched the YouTube video, and 4 days later, they're all gone. They left, or they die. Is it you doing something wrong? Not really. That's what the bees decide to do. But if you've got bees that are raised in, say, Eastern Washington, and you move them down here, the environment is totally different. They can't handle the weather change. So it is best to get local Douglas County bees. Better chance of them surviving. Are they evasive? No. Now, yellow jackets and wasps, I want nothing to do with those characters. They will get into a hive and destroy the hive. In the early spring, they will go after the sweet, the honey, and rob the hive. In the fall, they want meat. And you'll find a bunch of dead, you know, a bunch of heads in front of your hive because they just took the heads off and ate the rest. Not good for honey. A lot of people are paranoid about bees, but it's not bees, it's yellow jackets and wasps. That's an issue that we deal with a lot. The United States did not ever have genetic bee for this continent. We imported them all from Italy and Europe. And we have done some other importing. There's a type of bee that was brought from Africa into South America, okay, to see if they could build up the hives down there. Unfortunately, one of their employees got upset and opened all the hives. That allowed these very aggressive bees into the area. By the time they get up here, they're so inbred, it's not a problem. But if you're down in New Mexico or Texas or Southern California, these bees are just mean. And they will actually swarm and kill people. I know some beekeepers that actually have them. There's a gentleman that is a beekeeper at OSU that has a beekeeping business in South America that he raises these bees in, and he sells the wax to the cosmetic industry because it's pure. Again, there's no pure wax in the United States anymore. What other material bees make? They do honey, they do wax, and they do pollen. Pollen is used for medicinal purposes. Wax is used for candles and things of that nature, and then we've got honey. There are regulations regarding the labeling of honey, where it came from, who you are, how to contact you, the size, that kind of thing.
I have a quick question. So you're mentioning about the wax being like polluted, essentially, right? Yes. Toxic from the chemicals. Mm-hmm. How long would it take for that to not be polluted? Like, is it just that it's like, okay, now it's, you know, messed up and it can't be fixed, or?
It can't be fixed. Okay. Because of the way the bees live, and they go from hive to hive to hive, and they meet with other bees and things of that nature, that's an issue. You know, the varroa mite is a problem. Up until 3 years ago, we didn't really have a problem with varroa mites here in Douglas County. Places like Portland, where they had a very close contained area with lots of beehives, that's a problem. Now it is a problem for us.
Yeah, I've heard that bees can travel, what is it, up to like 3 miles, like pretty far away from the hive. So if,
they travel up to 3 to 5 mile radius. Okay, so if you have bees in your backyard, those bees are, in some cases, flying 3 to 5 miles away to get a little bit of nectar that they convert to honey. So because of that area, you can't really isolate them. And like I said, we, the beekeepers, did it to ourselves. Too much toxicity. As far as colonies and swarming, right now bees are resting. They live all year around. In about September, October, they get all the food they can, and they close themselves up into the hive. They keep that hive warm, like 94 degrees, year round. Okay. The queen is there. The workers are there. The queen has slowed down raising small bees, but they survive off the honey source. Now, a normal size hive needs 70 pounds of honey to survive a normal winter.
Gotcha. So that's why people can't take all the honey. It's like with any other natural process or resource or something, to keep the systems running properly, we have to leave a bit for the non-human beings.
They get into their winter mode in October or November. They stay in the hive all winter. Sometimes you'll see a bee come out, do a little cleansing fight, and go back in. But most of the bees are staying in the hive. Okay. A couple of years ago, we had a snowstorm like we did this year. But February was a really warm 2 weeks. So the bees said, it's spring. Kick the queen into gear. Let's start laying eggs and get going. And then all of a sudden we had a fast freeze. And they went, and they died. And we lost like 80 to 90% of the beehives in Douglas County just because of weather. This is now February. In March, April, they will start looking outside again. April, May, June, they're going to start harvesting their honey sources. And the queen's going to keep laying eggs. Now, the queen lives for like 3 to 4 years. She lays 2,000 eggs a day. So when it's good, when they got honey coming in, that hive is busy. At a certain point, not the queen, but the workers decide that we need to split the hive. So they will raise a new queen. Now, the queen doesn't have anything to do with this. But the workers then raise a new queen. The new queen comes out, raises herself. She goes out for a mating flight. She comes back. The old queen takes half of the hive and leaves. The new queen stays in the established hive. That gives more possibility of that hive surviving. Okay. It's almost like a family with kids. Instead of kicking the kids out at 17, the kids kick the parents out. Now they've got an existing home. It's all set. It's all stable. They're going to have a good life. They can what honeybees do. But they start swarming in May, June, July, April, May. Depends on the weather. The old hive goes out, goes into a tree on a branch, and that's a swarm. Now, if we can catch the swarm, that's great. That's easy. But then they send searchers out in that 5 mile radius, and one comes back and says, hey, I found an old car. And one comes back and says, I found a swimming pool. One comes back and says, I found an empty fuel tank. Ooh. One comes back and says, I found a roof that's nice and warm. And then they decide where to go. Some of the places we really don't want them to go, but that's what they do.
So I have a question about swarming. So you mentioned that the swarms will go with the older queen who only lives like 3 to 5 years or something. So Right. Like what happens if the queen dies or like is hit by a car on her mating flight or something?
They will try in some cases to convert a worker to a queen, but that bee only has half the genetics. So that's not good. In most cases, the hive tries to survive and it dies. As far as swarms are concerned, it's very time sensitive. If you called and said, hey, I've got a swarm in my bush in my front yard, you call me, I then immediately text my swarm group people and one of them comes by and gets it. because that hive might only be there as a swarm for an hour or 10 minutes or 3 days. We don't know. So that's time sensitive. When we do a cutout, which is a hive that's in a wrong place, like inside the back seat of a 57 Chevy, that's not time sensitive. And in some cases, we need to get insurance set up and all sorts of approvals set up and permissions and provide insurance and get this whole thing planned. And some of that planning can be very involved if you're dealing with, say, the county and a historical building. But again, we will, Douglas County Bees will come out and remove bees. We have people contacting us now saying, I got bees in this tree. Okay, we're not going to come now, but we will call you in March, April when it's warmer. And we'll schedule a time to come out, take a look at it, to make sure it's not a yellow jacket nest, and do all the planning to get your bees removed. Those bees usually go to other people in the club for free. So if you're in the club and you're on the swarm and cutout lists, you get free bees. And I know some people during the year will get 10 or 15 free hives.
How do they add them to a hive? Like, what do they do with the swarm?
If you get a swarm, let's say it's in your yard and it's in a bush, okay, I will come out with a bucket or a net, and I'll scoop them into a bucket. And if I can get the queen in the bucket, all the other bees will go right in. Okay. I'll put a lid on it, take it to another location 5 miles away that has a hive ready. It's an empty hive, somebody like you, that they haven't bought bees, but you want bees. Dump the bees in there. There you go. The cutouts are more complicated, and the survivability of cutouts is really low, because if we go in and have to cut a building apart to get these bees out, it turns into a gooey mess sometimes. Bees inside chimneys. I'm sorry, I can't save them. We've tried. They just can't survive all the soot and the junk. If you want free bees, you join the club and start asking questions. You get your hands dirty a little bit. You get comfortable with bees. And when you're ready to get them, then you go with it.
Yeah, it sounds like a great opportunity. If there's someone out there listening who wants to start with beekeeping, sounds like Douglas County Bees is the way to go.
And age is not an issue. You know, we've had people in the club that are like 10 or 12 years old that their parents bring them because they're interested. That's great. Unfortunately, due to insurance reasons, schools cannot have beehives on their property. I cannot have a hive on the Douglas County Master Gardener Test Gardens because it's county property. I can't put a hive there. There is one school in Douglas County that is it's a private school, and they have three hives in their backyard, in the back garden. And they have one of their people in the school who's now going through the Master Beekeeper program to take care of those bees. I've had instances where we're removing a bunch of bees out of an old building, and it's right across the street from a school. And all of a sudden we get a bunch of key teachers and kids on the other side of the street watching. And I come out and I talk to them, explain what we're doing. I want you guys to stay this far away. If somebody wants to get up close, I've got a suit, but it gets kids involved and they can come home. We see honeybees. We saw this and we, wow. And they're just excited.
What types of plants are good for bees in Southern Oregon?
They love blackberries. The best suggestion for people is to raise borage. Borage is a plant that once you get it started, you have borage. Hard to get started, but once it goes up, you've got lots of borage. The worker can come out to that plant 3 or 4 times a day and still get pollen and nectar. So it's a great source of honey for the bees.
Are the plants, so you mentioned borage, mm-hmm. Is that like native or invasive or I don't know.
borage, some people might consider borage a invasive plant because once you plant it, you've got borage. Okay. It is not normal in this area. So it's not a an original plant for this area.
Like not native, but it, like, does it, I know some invasive plants are invasive because they're just, you know, tenacious. And then other invasive plants like pollute or poison the soil or something. I don't know if it does that.
Yeah. And there, well, the problem is with some of the invasive plants is they will grow alongside a stream. They'll kill all the original plants out and destroy the ecosystem for the fish. Blackberries are from the Northwest. Himalayan back blackberries are very evasive, and those suckers need to be pulled and burned. So it just depends on the subspecies. So, and as far as good plants, I've got a list here of about 30 different plants, depending on what part of the country you're in, or part of the state. If you're in the coast, these plants. If you're in the Southwest, these plants. The best suggestion for that, come to a meeting, ask questions. There's a lot of information out there. OSU has a lot of information through their bee area, and it's great. A lot of people what I recommend is if you're interested in getting bees, you join a local club, you don't buy bees right away, and you get involved in a group like OSU Master Beekeeper Program. Okay, the first year of that is basically the basics. Hi, this is a bee. This is what it looks like. This is what it does. These are the parts of the bee. Then the journeyman level gets a lot more technical and very much deep into that. And the master's level of a master beekeeper is basically a college master's degree. It's at that high point. Now, some states, you walk into a building, give them $20 and you're a master beekeeper. Oregon does not do that. The biggest positive thing about the master beekeeper is people like me that are a mentor. So if you want to learn how to get bees, you get involved with OSU, you do their online classes, and then I call you up and say, hi, my name's Phil, I'm your mentor. Okay, any questions, call. If you want to see about bees personally, you can come over here and we'll tear a hive apart. Okay, once you get bees, I will come to your place, we'll inspect the hive and see how you're doing. The mentorship is a huge positive for the OSU program, and I can't say enough about that. That's a great thing.
Yeah, it's so helpful to have someone who's has experience doing something. Right. Yeah, that sounds awesome.
And again, there's the right way and the wrong way. As far as the right way, that's up to you to decide. The bees know what they're doing. You don't have to inspect them every other week. You don't have to put a bunch of toxic stuff in there. Just let them do their own thing. They know what they're doing. So as far as helping bee populations, again, get involved with the local group. Also, if you've got a mind to help the bees, okay, and you've got, half an acre lot in Roseburg, you don't know anything about bees, you work 9 to 5, your husband works 9 to 5, but what if we put a beehive in our backyard? At that point, there are people in the club, and I used to be one, that will take my hive, and I'll take it to your backyard. After I inspect it, yep, this is a good place, you're good people, no power lines up there. This is a good place for bees. Now, I will bring you one of my hives and put it on your property. You're the host. You get the pollination benefits, and if they produce enough honey to share, you would get half. So if you're concerned about honeybees, yeah, you can get a small hive and have some bees in your yard. You can get involved and have a hive in your yard. There are places that are just not good. I live in Camas Valley. Camas Valley is not a good honey place. Even based on Douglas County values, it's not. I have 7 hives on my property. I have to feed them heavily all year. There's just not enough forage for them.
What do you feed them if they don't have enough natural food?
I don't take their honey. I leave it for them in their wax. I will provide, in emergency situations, Dryvert sugar. Now, you can use cane sugar, which is fine. You don't want to use corn syrup. So anything with a corn syrup base, you don't. Dryvert sugar is also called baker's sugar. They've changed one of the molecules in it so that it's easier to absorb, and the bees love it. You can also get prepackaged pollen patties and such to feed them. What I do is, again, I don't take all their honey. I'm still using honey from my parents back in 1965. But I also will, you know, re-give them some of their honey back.
So you're mentioning that you have honey from, you know, years and years ago. How long does honey last?
There has been honey found inside the tombs in Egypt. It's still good.
That's crazy.
as long as you get the water moisture level content down. Okay. If it's not down, it'll mold. But if you've got honey that's properly processed and the moisture's not taken out, hundreds of years. Like I said, I've got honey from 1965 that is actually better than current honey because there's no toxicity in it.
So I have a question. You mentioned about power lines now and cell towers earlier. So why are those problematic for bees?
Bees travel by magnetics. They travel where the direction of the sun, where the sun is, and they use the Earth's magnetic fields to travel. So when one bee goes out and finds a spot for honey, she'll kind of come back to the hive. Well, to get there, she goes, you know, 50 paces this way, turn right, go 10 paces, go left, turn around in that car, go here, and she's got to make that same route to come back. Cell towers transmit a lot of electricity. The smart meters, to some people, is a major problem because it also transmits. Now, the electric companies say, no, this is a good kind of smart meter. It doesn't transmit. It runs through the wires. But there are people that have their reasons that, no, it's not good for the bees. It's not good for humans. It's not good for you to take your cell phone and walk around like this, you know, which it isn't, because you've got all that electricity and all that high frequency that we really don't know for sure what it does. So if I come out to your place and I see a high tension line across the top of your yard, no, we're not going to put bees here. And again, that subject gets into the area of conspiracy theories and gets way deep into, I won't go there. I have my own opinions. You have your own opinions. That's okay. But
it is true that, like, if we don't have enough information, we don't know if it's doing anything good or bad or whatever. Like, right. It's kind of like an experiment, but we're living it.
Yes. And you've got big corporations with big money. Now, oh, you got to get 5G. Well, there's billions of dollars in that thing. But it's a higher frequency range that has transmitters very close to each other. And is it a problem? Some people really believe it is. Now, did the industry test for that? Probably not. Even things like... I'm going to spray my Roundup on my garden. It's perfectly safe for humans. Okay. Well, it's not because it's got their lawsuits. But the point is that kind of thing is tested against humans, not honeybees. And they're little guys. So we don't know for sure what the long-term effects are. I do agree that, yes, high frequency radio waves, bad stuff for honeybees because they travel by magnetics.
Yeah, I guess my last question would probably be, if people are interested, you already kind of mentioned this, you know, attend a meeting or something, but yeah, where can people learn more if they are thinking like, okay, yeah, I want to try this out.
We have a website, Douglas County Bees. We have a Facebook page, Douglas County Bees. And there are people like me that you can contact to learn about bees. And I don't mind giving my phone number out and my email out. I am Phil the Bee Guy at Gmail, but it's two L's. The Bee Guy is one big word. So there are resources for you to get access to. We do a lot of person one-on-one at fairs and at events, like the Home and Garden Show that's coming up.
Is that an in-person event? Or I know there's like virtual things going on.
No. The Home and Garden Show happens every year at the Douglas County Fairgrounds. And it's free. It's a big event for people to show off their home stuff, like hot tubs and things, and garden stuff. And it's mostly vendors trying to sell products to you. But, you know, right there, we've got a booth. We're a nonprofit. We get the space for free. And we talk about bees. On request, I will go to a group, like the different organizations, fraternal organizations, and go give a class about bees. I'll give a class about bees to the Douglas County business groups. The COVID is really trashing clubs and organizations. Most people don't want to do things like Zoom meetings. Too complicated.
I think they're getting burnt out too. I know a lot of people have said they're getting Zoom fatigue or something like that.
Exactly. But I don't mind coming to people of any size and talking about bees. I am retired. I can do this. You know, I've been known to go to the Coos County Fair and talk about bees. I try to stay in Douglas County, however. But the biggest deal is, email us or contact us online. There is another group that the name is close in Douglas County. It is not a club. It is basically a clearinghouse for people to share where swarms are. And it's not a 401c3 organization.
Do you have anything else that you'd like to share before we wrap up?
I'm more than happy to come out and talk bees. I usually have a free form meeting, so it's kind of, I don't have an agenda to speak here. I'm here to talk about bees. Now, what's your questions? So if I'm at the Elks, it may go different directions than the Chamber of Commerce thing. So I'm more than happy to. Again, I'm the only journeyman beekeeper in Douglas County. There are a couple people that are the beginning level, but they don't want to go further than that. I don't blame them. And that's a lot of testing and a lot of one-on-one with the inspectors. Most people have gotten over the years that, it's a good thing to save honeybees. You know, 80% of our food crops are, in one way or another, pollinated by bees, not just honeybees, those 500 other bees.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing all of your knowledge and expertise. I'm here with Stan Petrowski, president of South Umpqua Rural Community Partnership, an organization dedicated to local environmental interests and restoration. You might recognize his voice as he hosts another show on KQUA called Radioactive Restoration. In this episode of Living Downstream, he's going to be talking with us about beekeeping. First of all, why beekeeping? How or when did you get started with it?
Well, I've been involved with beekeeping for about 45 years. I started as a young man living in Colorado. I was always fascinated by bees and their role that they played in the ecosystem.
Awesome. When I talked to you the other day, you said that you practice something called natural beekeeping. What exactly does that mean?
Okay, so I'm this crusty old Vietnam veteran that had been exposed to Agent Orange quite heavily. And so at an early age, I would say right around in my 20s, when I came home from the war, I immediately started gravitating toward a naturalistic paradigm. I started eating organic food and really trying to discover the secrets of nature. And so I'm very hesitant to intervene in natural processes with chemical solutions, synthetic chemical solutions. So natural beekeeping is a process whereby we manage the bees to the best of our ability using natural methods, being aware of natural processes and supporting those processes without harsh pesticides or other chemical solutions.
Yeah, some of those chemicals can be so harmful. And I think people forget that, you know, when we start spraying things or spreading things around, it doesn't always just impact the target species. You know, it can really have negative impacts on other species as well. And I know a lot of the bee populations across the country, I'm from the eastern side of the country, but there and probably here too, there's, you know, certain populations are just getting decimated both by chemicals and by, you know, invasive species or different things coming in. So how many hives do you have?
Well, I'm not a professional commercial beekeeper, but I keep around, right now I've got 15 hive bodies and I try to keep them full. Right now bees are under duress along with many other insects on the planet. I just read an article yesterday, in fact, where they're estimating that 2% of the world's insect population is being lost annually. And so my interest in keeping bees is to maintain a natural population of pollinators, both for the natural world, flowers, trees, and what have you, but also the extra benefit of harvesting some organic honey.
Yeah, I was going to ask, you know, what types of products, so-called products you get from the bees. I know some people get honey, some people, like you said, and some people get, you know, they make lotion or use the propolis. Or so do you harvest just honey or do you, you know, get other things from the hive as well?
My wife is very interested in candle burning. So we take all of the beeswax that is excess and we make candles. We also, of course, use the honey and some of the propolis also.
Very cool. Yeah, I like beeswax candles too. So that's neat that you make those. yeah, so I think a question that I asked when I first started learning about beekeeping and something that I'm guessing some of the listeners also might be wondering, how often do you get stung?
Well, when I started out with bees, let's put it this way. I've never purchased bees. I've always captured swarms, and I always considered the bee population that were part of our hives as feral bees. I would say over the course of 40 plus years, I might have been stung once or twice, but over the last 5 years, let's say, the bees have become more aggressive, and that just comes with territory. I'm not interested in breeding that out. I would say that part of their defense is to be a little bit aggressive. So in the process, I've been stung quite a few times. Last year, I think I got about 21 stings. Foolishly, my old habits die hard, so I wasn't wearing any bee equipment. I just go out there and try to catch a swarm or do something with the bees, and I'm learning to respect them a little more.
Yeah, I was wondering that too, whether you were wearing protective gear or anything. I know some people have the whole suit and some people don't like to do that. And I think, isn't it that the bees can detect
was it pheromones or something that we give off. So if we act really nervous or we're feeling nervous, even if we don't think that we're showing it, they can kind of detect that. I don't know. Have you seen that to be the case?
Yeah, I think it's that. But I also think there's some genetic predispositions also that wild bees just tend to be a little more defensive.
Yeah, that makes sense. So besides getting stung, what other challenges have you encountered with beekeeping?
Well, at this point, most people are aware of the fact that bee populations are dying. Sudden hive collapse and some of the other peculiar actions of hives just disappearing or dying from viruses, et cetera. There's varroa mites, tracheal mites, and also different types of viruses that impact the bee populations. They're really under a lot of stress. And so what we're hoping to do is we try to maintain twice the amount of hives that we think we'd like to have. Because at this juncture, anywhere between a third and half of most hives never make it through the winter. In contrast to, let's say, the first 25 years that we've lived here in the middle of the Umpqua National Forest, I had hives that I never even had to mess with at all. They just year after year after year, they survived. Now, all of a sudden, we have invasive mites and viruses that these bees are not familiar with, don't have the antibodies to deal with. So we're hoping to naturally allow them to build up their immunity and basically become survivors.
That's thinking about, you know, our current situation with COVID virus. I don't know, thinking about, yeah, different people's take on, you know, what to do, how to combat that. I know some people use, you know, medications or different things for their bees to try to, you know, protect their bees kind of, but then they're not, like you said, developing those natural antibodies and like that genetic hardiness kind of on their own. So there's kind of benefits and drawbacks to each, I think.
If I see symptoms of a virus, there's one virus that is very deadly. It's called deformed wing virus. I don't mind adding some natural oils like spearmint or stuff like that to the hive. You know, I try to minimize any intervention like that. But if I know there's one that's really sick, I want to give it the best chance I can without, you know, over medicating. That would be the full extent of any human intervention that we would do.
Yeah, when I was taking a beekeeping class, I was thinking too about another challenge that some people have faced, which is the bees drowning. And so one thing that they mentioned for that challenge was to have kind of like a shallow dish with water and having, you know, stones or something that the, or was it duckweed? something like that, that the bees can stand on so they don't drown, but they need to get water. So yeah, do you put any water out or just like they get it from natural sources?
Well, we have a little bird fountain in the front yard and the bees freely access it. Plus we have a live stream not too far from here that they can access water from, et cetera.
Gotcha. Kind of paired with that, in the training, they were saying that, you know, I guess bees are, because they're really attracted to kind of like certain scents or, you know, different types of things. So there were a lot of bees in that area that were dying in pools because the chlorine kind of attracted them or that scent. Or if you had, you know, a slight, you know, if you added, yeah, like a drop of essential oil or something in the water, they'd be more likely to go to that water or something because of the slightly different aroma. I mean, you're thinking about bees, they're, you know, going to flowers and getting all these different, you know, pollen and that kind of thing. So I don't know. Yeah, just kind of an interesting thought process. It's kind of like with, you know, animal rehabilitation or anything else when we're working with natural systems, we have to think about the context of that species in the system and, you know, how they're operating, what senses are extra strong, you know, what types of food do they want? We need to make sure they have access. So just kind of thinking more holistically, I guess, about the area in which we're trying to keep them.
We have clean, good water. By and large, we do have a problem because we live in forest, in the mountains. There's a lot of clear-cut logging that goes on, and as a result, there's a lot of pesticide and herbicide spraying that takes place. And, you know, if you use nicotinoids or any of those sprays, you can really hammer your beehives. So we're pretty conscious of that. We're very concerned about it, not only for the bees themselves, but all insects and wildlife and humans. When you have this cocktail of atrazine and glyphosates and who knows what else, it's very likely that you're going to hurt the wildlife and the insect life in the watershed. So we watch that pretty carefully. There's not a whole lot we can do, but we have an idea when they spray, mostly in the spring. So we watch the hives to see what the repercussions are.
Yeah. Do you know how far away bees fly? Like, what is their range to get food?
They prefer to go within 3 miles of the hive. They can go further and sometimes do, depending on the value of the source, the abundance of the source, etc.
Yeah, I was thinking for people who might want to start beekeeping or get involved with it, they'll have to think about, you know, it's not just, you know, if, let's say somebody's on an acre or two, the bees are probably going to range a bit further than their property to get the pollen that they need to make honey, to make all these different things. So think about what's around you when you're wanting to set up those hives.
If you're in an urban situation and you want to have bees, I highly recommend that you keep the bees way off the ground level in seriously urban settings. A lot of people have their hives up on a roof, and you don't want to overdo it with your hives in the sense that you don't want to overstock a given area, especially in urban areas. You don't want to have so many hives that you starve your bees out. So you start out slow. I would recommend, if anyone's seriously interested in doing bees, that you start with 3 hives. The likely scenario is that you're going to lose 1 or 2 hives each year. So you take 3, so you're at least going to have 1 hive. And though you might lose a hive, that doesn't mean you're going to lose the honey. There can be honey in the hive, even though the hive dies from an infection. So it's not a total loss.
If there are listeners who are interested in getting started with beekeeping, do you have any, you know, resources that you would recommend for them?
I highly recommend that you connect with a local beekeeping club. Usually there are, in any given area, a group of people that kind of work together and have fun with bees.
That makes sense. Yeah. You know, go to people who are already keeping bees and get some information from them. Yeah, that's who I took a class from back east. There was this great beekeeping group, like a collaborative, which was like a tri-state thing. But they had a lot of kind of experts just because of all the experience they had gleaned from, you know, years and years. How can people get a hold of you or learn more about things that you're doing, whether it's beekeeping or other types of things living off the land naturally?
Email is the best. It would be stanley@umpquawatersheds.org.
That works. Is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners?
Well, I would like to encourage people to get involved with beekeeping. The natural world needs them. Our food supply depends on them. And it's really fascinating. Just consider how large can a bee's brain be? And yet they're so intelligent and they function in a very healthy manner in terms of their community. There's a lot to learn from these little critters. Plus, I would suggest that if you can do it at all, plant the pollinator garden. Plant a bunch of flowers and choose ones that produce a lot of nectar, and you'll see the bees. You'll see how they work, and they'll mesmerize you into working with them.
All right. Well, thank you so much for all the information you shared, and yeah, if anybody out there wants to start beekeeping, go for it.
My pleasure. Thank you. And I enjoyed the interview.
The intro and outro music for this show are excerpts from the song Forest by Vlad Gluchenko, used under the Creative Commons Attribution 3.0 license. You can find more information about this song in Living Downstream's information section.